Let's go, Rider Nation.
Welcome to the Piffles Podcast, your Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan podcast, where the show's made up and the points don't matter. I've been getting a lot of, like, whose line is it anyway reels on Facebook lately.
I love that show.
I apologize in advance.
I used to watch it on YTV as a kid, like the original British series.
Oh, wow.
That's where I first discovered Colin Mochrie and Ryan Stiles. So good.
Ryan Good Stiles Lord, on the old. Drew Carey Show.
I am old, but...
well, that's the way the show's going to go today.
just off the rails.
It's off the rails, off the start. And that's the way I hope it goes the entire time. Of course, thanks everybody for listening on your favorite podcast platform, watching on YouTube, on Sastel, Max TV, On Demand. We appreciate it. You can give us a follow on X at Piffles Pod. I'm at Real Alex D.
I'm Safamud.
And as always, I do not need nor want your pity follows at Greg on Sports.
Check us out on Facebook as well, too. And the website, piffles podcast.com. Piffles Podcast, of course, brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Before we get started, for those watching, you can see this super sweet Zubaz style hat that I'm wearing. For those that are listening, I'm wearing a hat and it's a Zubaz style green and white rider hat from probably from the 90s somewhere. That's when Zubaz was a thing, right?
Unless you live in Buffalo. I just saw a clip with the Riders and Bret Hart featuring Glenn Kolka. So like we are really throwing it back today.
Yeah. I just want to say that I love the CFL, but I love it because of the CFL family and the people that we've gotten to meet across the country. This hat, actually, it came to me. I had knew nothing about it. Showed up in the mail one day last week, and it was Brittany in Ottawa, or just outside in Ontario, sent this hat. Her grandma had it, and it was just in all of her things. And she was like, okay, well, once grandma passed away, we held on to everything and wanted to find, you know, someone who could appreciate the hat the way that it should be. And then she just sent it to me. So super cool. Brittany, thank you. Means a lot. That's why I'm wearing it. Great hat. And also, speaking of the CFL family, why I love them, out of nowhere, Arlene, which you guys will know is Grey Cup Bound on Twitter, X. Lovely person. Love Arlene. Got this awesome painting of my dogs done up and sent to Amy and I, and done by Laura Lee Morris. And it's just cool. And it's just great people across the CFL family. And just want to give them a little shout out here because that's why I love the CFL. Yes, I love the game itself, but it's the people around it that make it so good. So.
You know, normally I feel sorry for the people who choose to watch the video version of this show because they're stuck with us. But today they get Zubaz hats and awesome paintings. So I feel a little bit sad for the podcast listeners today.
You audiophiles are missing out.
I'll post a picture of me in a Zubaz hat. I apologize in advance. Maybe I'll put the Zubaz hat on my dog. Maybe we'll do that. Make it look pretty decent anyway. Anyway, I love the CFL family, and that's another reason why we do this is because we love the CFL, we love the game, and the people that love the CFL as well are just fantastic people.
Well, and you want to talk about the greatness of the CFL family? They just released the numbers for the Fans Fight Cancer event from Hamilton last year. They topped $41,000, and that's 100% coming from the CFL family across Canada. Like you said, they're just great people. It's why we still do this.
Every fan base is going to have their bottom of the earth knuckle draggers. Rider fans have them. Bomber fans have a lot of them. Me. But there's some really great people out there from all teams, even ones I can't stand. So the people are nice, at least. We'll go with that.
Well, let's get things started off here on the show. It's time for the opening kickoff. Now, seeing as it's the kind of the real quiet part of the off season, not a lot going on right now, perfect time for the Riders to make an announcement that they did. And I absolutely love this, you guys. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders renamed the Football Operations Auditorium at Mosaic Stadium in Jim Hobson's honor. Had him and his family there. It was a small gathering, but it was perfect to rename it, have him there to do it, celebrate the man who basically got Mosaic Stadium built, and to have his name there where, you know, the team has their big team meetings and whatnot. It was a really classy thing to do by the team. And I love that they did that while Jim's still with us, so that not only so he can see it happen, so his family could see it happening for him. I thought it was just very, very classy all around, and great stuff from the Riders on Monday.
It's perfect. Mosaic Stadium is the house that Jim built. He was the catalyst that got that stadium built. And to have a room, especially one that they... And I would like to point out, I think the fact that they renamed the room is also why they fixed that bloody A in
the Saskatchewan side. You're happy.
I was so happy when I saw that. I was feeling the emotions when I saw Jim there and the family. But then when they showed the Saskatchewan Rough Rider sign completely fixed, I knew they were taking it seriously. But no, it's an awesome honor. And the fact that it took them this long to name a room after him, after everyone else they named room after in there. Wish it was sooner, but not a more deserving guy, that's for sure.
They had to do it. It's a great move by the Riders. I like the timing of it. Like you said, I'd rather they do it now while he's still alive and he's still, you know, moving around and in good spirits. This was the perfect time, quiet time of the off season. Get some news out there and get a man who deserves the celebration his time in the limelight. Because if this happens right around free agency, it gets lost real quick. If it happens around the draft, it gets lost real quick. This is really the only Rider news that we've had for a little while. So it was good for the team, and the whole story was beautiful, and his speech was beautiful, and just like you said, well overdue. Glad they did it.
Yeah, so be good that everybody was there to be able to do that and happen. So It was beautiful, like you said, Steve. It was just super classy and really great of the Riders to do that. So wanted to mention that to start the show, because that's the big thing, right? There were some signings as well over the last little bit since our last show. There's one in particular we're going to get to that's going to be – it's a little bit long.
Keyshawn, baby! Woohoo!
Yeah. We'll start there. Keyshawn Johnson. I can't reach mine. I have Keyshawn on a Jets helmet.
Not this receiver. Keyshawn. I wish it was this Keyshawn. I wish it was this Keyshawn. That would have been amazing.
That'd be a Chris Jones move right there is what that would be. That'd be, remember when he tried to almost brought in Terrell Owens? Well, that was the rumor going around.
Brought in Vince Young.
Yeah, that's a Chris Jones move.
Couldn't say Saskatchewan after three tries.
So the Riders signed a receiver, Keyshawn Johnson. And looking at we'll talk about receivers here for a little bit. Going into free agency, I guess, I was convinced that there's only one open spot on the roster for a starting spot in the receiving group. You have your KSB, Sam Amelis as your starting Canadians. You have Linnaeus.
Your Bain.
You have Bain starting as well. Jareth Stearns, I think you can kind of pencil in. But I don't know so much anymore. I think there's going to be a complete open spot for two spots, the Stern spot and then the other spot, I guess, left by Tevin Jones. So I think there's two open American receiver spots. in the starting lineup, plus practice roster, all that kind of stuff. I'm really looking forward to the competition from the receivers that they're bringing into camp, because they're bringing in quite a few, and there's a couple spots.
I think it's more there's an open spot and a competitive spot. I think Stern definitely has the inside track, but they've signed some really interesting guys out there. You got Geronimo coming in with NFL experience. You got a lot of young guys with have speed and height, and I'm curious what they can actually do here. Like Lipscomb was on the roster last year. He might be better coming in this year. That Daz Newsome, kind of interesting. Jake Parker's got like sprinter speed.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a battle.
I think the biggest thing that you highlighted is they're bringing a bunch of guys with NFL experience. Johnson has a little bit. Geronimo Allison's got a lot. These are guys that have been to the show and are still relatively young. I can't remember how old Keyshawn Johnson is. Obviously, he's not 51. Keyshawn Johnson we're all hoping for. I think he's 27, 28, if I remember correctly. He's spent the last 5 years on practice rosters in the NFL. So obviously guys have given him this shot. He's somebody that has the talent to stick around. Now he's going to get his chance to show it. I don't think we have any real locked in spots outside of the Bain and the Canadian options. It's going to be a fun training camp, and not because we're looking to reload half the roster, but because there's a team that needs to be retooled a little bit now after a fairly active free agency.
Keyshawn is 27. So, and Jake Parker's 28 and wearing the unfortunate number of 74. So,
well, what
I don't know how many receivers that wear 74 to make the team.
What number was Ray Elgard when he started? He was in the 70s as well, too, though. So 72, he might have been 72. It happens.
It happens, I guess.
And a couple signings for defensive backs. Jamar Johnson on Tuesday. And then last week, and this is the one I want to talk about, Holton Hill. Holton Hill, now there's a big, long overview of him, size, strength, all this kind of stuff. Should have been a day two NFL draft pick. But his weaknesses is basically, the scouts called him immature and question his willingness to treat it like a job at the next level. And reading a lot of this stuff, there was an anonymous NFC area scout who said he will fall further than he should because you can't trust him. He needed a clean, productive season to rehab the perception around him. And I felt like he should have gone back to school. Guy can play. He's a day two talent, but I doubt he goes there. This reminds me a lot of Nick Marshall. When you look at the strengths and weaknesses of what both of these players have, it's pretty identical. Very good players. You kind of question some stuff.
When you have really athletic people, sometimes they overcompensate with their athleticism. They don't need to try as hard. We've seen those guys. We've seen guys. It's actually in anything. If you got someone who's naturally gifted in a certain aspect of their job, they will sometimes coast. And reading through this scouting report, and God, I love these NCAA scouting reports sometimes. Just they get so in the weeds of just ridiculous stuff. But yeah, so unfortunately, he got the reputation of being immature, not wanting to put in the work, and stuff like that will follow you around, unfortunately.
And I looked at this signing and I looked at the scouting report, and I thought to myself two very specific things. I said, oh, good, we've got another Nick Marshall. And I also thought, oh, good, we've got another Nick Marshall. Because he's a player you love, and if he's got the talent, you're going to love the plays he makes, but you're going to hate the plays he misses. And it all comes down to his willingness to put the work in at this level. We know that Nick Marshall had the talent and the athleticism to be greater than he was. And for several years, he was great.
He was the best and corner in the league.
Yeah, and then he became that hit, that big player nothing cornerback that we loved to hate and hated to love. I'm kind of excited for this only because of the positives. I'm going to overlook the weaknesses for now and hope that maybe he has grown since a month ago.
Well,
he can dream, well, right?
He had 3 years with the Minnesota Vikings. You don't stick around on an NFL roster on any NFL team for that long without them seeing something in you.
And the good news is, compared to Nick Marshall, this guy apparently is known for his tackling and hitting. And Nick Marshall was not. So I think that is a bonus. But yeah, it sounds like he just doesn't put in the effort that these scouts thought he should put in. But you're right. You don't stay on a NFL roster, practice roster or not, for 3 years unless you are putting in the work, at least at some level.
Here's the scary part, though. If you're not putting in the work for million-dollar contracts, are you going to be putting in the work for lunch pail contracts?
To hopefully get back to the million-dollar contract, you'd think you would, right?
And he is young. He's only 26. So he can have a few good years up here and make it back because he has the history in the NFL. So he'll get that look again if he can show he has matured. Let's hope for it.
And at the same time, who at that age didn't make dumb decisions?
I still do, and I'm 42. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm again, defensive back. That's another position in training camp that I'm really looking forward to seeing the competition. They're bringing in a lot of guys here, tentatively for one spot and a couple practice roster spots, really. So it's going to be quite a battle because they're bringing in quite a few players. You got Rodney Clemens, CJ Colden, Cole Coleman, Mark Fields, Holton Hill, Jamar Johnson, Mark McLaurin, who was with Edmonton last year.
Jalen Edwards Cooper.
Yeah. Like, these are guys that are essentially fighting for one, maybe two spots on the active roster. So it's going to be quite the competition in training camp.
Every time I go through the roster and see Habakkuk Maldonado, I just smile. Love that name.
So there's the signings over the last week here for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. I'm surprised we haven't seen any quarterbacks. Are you guys surprised we haven't seen a young quarterback brought in? I'd like see one. Really?
I mean, they've got four under contract. I could see them maybe bringing in one more as a camp body, but I think they're happy with who they got. You've already got your number one and your number two. We know Mason Fine's going to go into the season as the backup, because there's no other option. And you got Patterson and Pipkin to take that, you know, third down gamble spot or the bench spot, I suppose. I don't think Patterson would be too excited.
What if Patterson challenges Fine this year for number two? I think that's an option.
See, to me, I think that's the battle, is the number two spot, because I think Pipkin's going to be the three. I think his short yardage is good enough where that's probably the plan. And he does have experience starting in the CFL, so you do have an experienced backup just in case things, you know, go sideways like they did last year for the team. Because I can't see Patterson and Fine both making the team. I just can't see it.
They did last year.
Well, yeah, but also I don't see Patterson, you know, settling for that again. Is he going to take a practice roster spot again? I doubt it.
It's no job at all. Is there going to be another team out there that's going to pick him up if he gets cut? If he can't beat out Mason Fine for a job, is somebody going to offer him a job?
Good question.
That number, yeah, the unfortunately, Rider fans pray for the health of Trevor Harris.
We have to this year.
Yeah, like light a candle, pull out your beads, pray to whatever God you pray to, because woof. I don't we saw what Mason Fine as a starter looked like. Shea Patterson never got a chance because of injury. I don't know.
And that's why I think they should be bringing in a younger guy, at least for the beginning of rookie camp. See if the guy can make the throws and whatnot, right? First couple days of training camp, because you're going to need arms in training camp. You don't want to waste Trevor Harris's arm, you know, in before preseason even starts. But there is no long-term future on this roster right now for a quarterback. I just don't see it. I don't see it being Patterson, and it's definitely not Fine. And I know I was saying that I think the bridge is there for this year for Cameron Dukes to be the guy that they go after next year, Toronto's backup. But with the whole Chad Kelly thing, who knows? So I'd like to see them bring in a young guy just to get the experience of a pro training camp and see if he takes a practice roster spot.
They got to bring in another arm. You're right. Four quarterbacks is not enough to get through a training camp, especially with, you know, what Trevor Harris can do. As long as he stays limber and good, you don't need to worry about him chucking every day. Yeah, bringing in another arm definitely wouldn't hurt them.
We left off last weekend talking about girl math and the Riders putting out that ad. Of course, because this is how the world works. As soon as we put out a show, something happens, whether it's a signing or whatever. We talk.
The Riders listen.
They listen.
And then they make a move.
And then the very next day after we release the show, they sent out another email apologizing for missing the mark on the girl math. And it was, I think it was a good apology. It actually went into detail, which you don't see a lot of in public apologies by corporations. So I thought it was genuine. Again, I love that they went out and tried. I really, really do. It fell flat. And I hope they keep swinging for the fences on their ads and trying to get people into the stadium. Cause they're going to hit some home runs. They really are. This one just, it was a ground ball.
When you look back to last season, we saw some of those home runs, the watermelon ad, the chips ad with Rob Vanstone, right? Like they are making great moves. This one wasn't it, but they came out immediately with a much better than you come to expect apology that really laid it out and explained why. The only issue I've seen from some people with the apology is that it somehow blamed the women for it. I think they were trying to explain that there were women involved in this process to kind of explain that it wasn't a male-led thing that a lot of people thought it was. But that part of it almost missed the mark more than the actual ad.
Yeah.
The rest of it was solid.
I think, and we brought it up when we were discussing this, there was a lot of PTSD from the Experience Regina fiasco, and they thought they needed to over explain their process, and in doing so somehow created a different controversy with it. I've seen, and it's typical, you're not going to make everyone happy with everything you do. I've seen people more mad that they apologized about it and not just owned it and moved on, because people are soft and you can't make jokes anymore. No, sometimes you can't make jokes anymore. That is called accountability. That's the world we live in now. We live in a society, people. Did they need to apologize? I don't know. They did. So good on them. They realized they offended some people and they missed. So once again, it's much ado about nothing, but I'm glad they took accountability, because more often than not, you get that typical, I'm sorry we offended people, or I'm sorry you didn't get the joke. And this seemed actually genuine, going, hey, we missed the mark, we'll be better, which is way more accountability than 95% of companies do when something like this happens.
And, you know, I saw a lot of people respond also with, this was basically an I'm sorry you didn't get the joke type apology. And I look at this, I've read it a dozen times, and I don't see that at all. That didn't read that way to me. It read very much like you said, like a well laid out and explained path through the through what they went through to make this ad happen. But a lot of people were saying that it was a, I'm sorry you didn't get it. Do either of you see that in this apology or this letter?
I don't, but in something like this, where it's such a, I mean, it's a TikTok trend, right? Look at the core base of fans of Saskatchewan Rough Riders. It's not a TikTok base. So jokes aren't funny when you have to explain them. So the fact that they had to kind of explain it, I don't know, just the whole, it just didn't land. That's all. It's really quiet now.
Yes. What happened? I was waiting for you to move on because I have nothing more to say on this.
Okay.
Would you like me to make a wide apology for why it's so quiet all of a sudden?
Yes, I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
You didn't get it. Can you explain your process to apologize for that?
I was vocalizing everything that was in my head through that entire quiet period. There you go.
One thing I'm surprised we haven't heard much about over the last month anyway, is a play-by-play voice. I know it's still, you know, a couple months away from training camp. We're about 2 months away from rookie camp. I'm sure they have some sort of plan in place. I'm just surprised we haven't heard anything. When do you guys think this is going to happen, that we're getting a new play-by-play voice? Because Harvard Media or Harvard Broadcasting did have a posting for two reporters and two anchors that ended at the end of February. And no, we did not apply for that. I should have, in retrospect.
Did we? Didn't we? No, we didn't. No.
Too busy applying for the play-by-play job.
But that's basically for the pre and post game show, and then whoever Harvard's going to send out to practice and report on the team. But a play-by-play, something totally different. I don't know. Is this going to happen anytime soon? Do you guys think?
They obviously they're going to have to make an announcement before training camp. I think if they go into training camp, the story is going to be, why haven't they announced anybody? And I understand that's not a Rider problem. That's a Harvard problem. But as proven by the previous guy and the team, no one seemed to be able to separate the two from each other, which is probably why he's no longer there. It's going to be before training camp. They obviously have someone in mind or already in place, because they advertised these two positions, but not play-by-play. When DT left, they advertised both the sports cage and the play-by-play voice separately. So they obviously have someone lined up. There's rumors going around. I tend to believe one of them is fairly credible. And I think it's going to be a good good move if it's who I think it is. So I'm not going to bring up names because I don't want to blow up anyone's spot. I'm not going to say who I think it is.
You say that it's going to be before training camp. I think it's going to be before St. Patrick's Day. I think we're coming up to the point where they've got their guy. They know who they want, or at least they have an idea of who they want. And they're going to make an announcement when it's easiest. If you do that between free agency and the draft, he becomes the next story. And you got to fit that in, because there was too much negativity around the last guy and the firing and all of that. They're going to want to highlight the next guy and make sure they've got all their ducks in a row. So I have a feeling that this is not going to be a last minute before training camp thing. I think we're going to be mid-March, maybe a little bit later. But we're coming up to an announcement pretty quick. And like you said, if it's who we're hearing, I'm kind of excited.
Have they ever publicly announced that the other guy is gone?
The team? Nope.
No, even Harvard. They, like, when Roddy left, they made an announcement. No. When DT left, there was an announcement. This has been radio silence. If it wasn't for 3Down getting a hold of that memo, okay, we would have known because we know people that know people that know people. We knew before the Three Down Nation thing came out. Three Down Nation was the only one that put this up publicly, and then it kind of went from there. So I'm surprised there has not been anything on it. Besides, I guess he did. I'm leaving Harvard eventually, but that took 2 weeks.
It's funny if you actually Google the last guy's name and CKRM, he still has a page on their main website that lists him as the voice of the Riders. So no, I don't think they have actually publicly said anything. So maybe that's why we're not hearing anything, is they're not ready to make their official statements yet. I mean, everybody and their dog knows he's gone. So
probably waiting for contracts to end, or terms of contracts to end, is my guess on that.
Legal.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely legal and human resources.
They can take off, eh? Greg knows where I'm going with that. Speaking of taking off, Banjo Bowl bus, we're a go again this year. Steve, you're putting that together yet again.
Can't wait. You know, I constantly complain about all the work I do for it, but deep down, we all know constantly. I enjoy it.
Oh my God.
It's so much fun for me. It's honestly, that trip is the highlight of my year every year. It's so much fun. We get a group of great people. And when a party starts at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know it's going to be a good day. And it is. There's people who get on the bus and immediately start partying. Then there's people who nap for the first couple hours. But all that I know is we're all going to head into Winnipeg. We're going to put that L in Winnipeg this year. It's about damn time.
Yes.
We'll have some solid details on that out next week.
I thought you said Friday.
Yeah, the end
Did
of
I say
week.
Friday?
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You, we'll have some details on our socials on Friday. You know what? I don't even know what I said. I trust you guys to keep me in line.
You're the one who said it. It's on your personal account. We'll be announcing information on Friday. So I'm like, okay, we're announcing Friday.
Well, this is my baby. This bus tour is my trip. I enjoy it. So I guess we'll be telling everybody all the details on Friday. I can't wait.
So if you're looking to go to the Banjo Bowl, don't want to have to make the drive yourself, join us. We'll have a big bus of 55, I think. Is that what it holds? 55? 55 going to
in a box of prizes.
Yeah. Big box. Actually, right in front of me. A whole bunch of stuff here. We'll save the treats for the bus, but lots of good stuff that we'll be giving away for great Rider fans here on the bus. But if you've been on the trip with us, you know what it's like. If you haven't, it really is kind of a party, especially after we hit Brandon for breakfast. After that,
you gotta get that base. You gotta get that base layer in, and then you're good.
And we have a good time. And honestly, the Bombers, the fans there treat us very well. The tailgates before the game, in the stadium. You'll get a couple of the knobs, but you get that anywhere you go, right? I don't know what else to call them. I got to keep it kind of PG, right?
A good word is any.
It's all in fun, and we've always had a great time going out there. So if you're thinking about possibly going to the Banjo Bowl this upcoming year, join us. Go in there. Join the Piffles Podcast bus. We'll have the details out on Friday. And
and that's this Friday, the March 8th, for people that are listening to us later in time.
Yeah, and I can tell you there'll be plenty of beverages consumed on that trip.
Thanks to our next segment sponsor.
Yes, exactly. This was the opening kickoff presented by Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty. Let's jump to our Churchill Brewing Company odds and end zones. I got a Rider question for you guys here in a little bit, but this is usually where we go around kind of the CFL. Really, really sad news in the CFL world. Found out that former defensive end Craig Rowe passed away last Monday at the age of 33. Battled colon cancer for 18 years.
Months.
And for one, it's way too damn young. Like that. And he kept it private. He didn't want to make anything about him. But this one really hits for me. Peel back the curtains a little bit. Craig and his wife, Chelsea, struggled to have a family. They went through infertility treatments, all that kind of stuff. Like, it was, and they finally were blessed with a child, Max. And I remember when they announced being pregnant, and I felt so, so happy and relieved for them, because my wife and I went through the exact same thing. And it's not something that a lot of people talk about. It drains you emotionally, physically, financially, to go that route. And then to know that just less than 2 years after they have a child, dad's no longer there. Like, that, when I saw this news, it crushed me. He was just a fantastic person. So was his wife, Chelsea. And it's just horrible news in the CFL.
Chelsea and Craig, like, Craig's death row shirts that he sold for the Bombers for charity, I designed those, and I was dealing with Craig and Chelsea back and forth quite a bit there. Awesome people. They actually sent me, they're supposed to be blue and gold. They actually sent me one in black and gray, so I wouldn't have to wear a blue and gold shirt. That's just that little touch was awesome. I pulled that shirt out of the drawer the other day because I was thinking about it. But awesome guy, and it just, yeah, it sucks. He was an awesome player. Always wanted him to be a Rider. Anytime he came up in free agency, I'd always tag him, and Chelsea would always like, no, we're not coming there, quit. But yeah, it's just 33 is too young, and young Max lost his dad, and sucks.
But and you look at it, the thing that shocked me the most, like you guys said, there was no public information. Nobody knew he was sick, other than obviously, I assume, close friends and family. But he was posting about his defensive lineman training program right up until his final days. And part of his reasoning for not saying anything was he wanted it to be about his work, and he didn't want to be the story. He wanted the work to be the story. And he's, his wife is still carrying that on past his, or after his passing. That tells you everything about the kind of person he was. It wasn't about the publicity. It wasn't about him. It was about everything around him. And it sucks. 33 is too young. You know, we're from Saskatchewan. Obviously, we love to hate Bomber players, but he was one of those guys you couldn't do it. You couldn't hate him. He just seemed like a larger than life kind of guy. So it that definitely hit home a little bit. That's 33 is too young. It's far too young.
And I'm sure both the BC Lions and the Blue Bombers will have nice tributes for their home openers anyway, for Craig. Going around the CFL, some Rider ties, I guess. Drew Tate officially named as an offensive assistant in Toronto. He was, of course, the wide receiver coach here last season.
That still cracks me up that Drew Tate was a wide receiver coach.
And he was Cody Fajardo's backup in 2019. Was it 2019? 2018. One of the 2 years. 19. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 2018.
For the playoffs, right? Because that was when Cody was having the back injury that almost kept him out of the game. Oh, yeah. And Drew Tate was the kind of the emergency backup. And he
was 19. Story. It wasn't 18. It was 19.
Was it 19?
19.
One of those two.
Cody never got, no, Cody never got his. Cody, yeah. Cody never made his. Yeah.
I'm looking at his career right now. It was 2018.
Oh, okay. That he was with the
Riders. Yeah. I'll never forget watching the team come out of the tunnel, and there were still question marks. Is Cody going to play? And Drew Tate comes out in sweatpants. I'm like, oh yeah, Cody Fajardo's, he'll play the full game.
You want to talk about a guy who's made a career out of never out of holding a clipboard. I don't think there's a better poster child than Drew King.
Chase Daniel? He started
15 games in his, yes, he said NFL-wise, Chase Daniel. Okay. Yeah, but CFL-wise, Drew Tate started 15 games over, what, 10 years?
He is like, the CFL's a guy, Alex Moran.
Yeah, threw for 5,000 yards in his entire career and has made a coaching career out of it. And a solid one at that.
Who's the CFL's Thad Castle?
Ooh,
you bring up Alex Moran.
Yeah. We're talking Blue Mountain State for those who don't understand the reference.
Coming back, isn't it?
It's coming back. It is coming back. And
go Goats.
That is back.
Back from Thad his Castle. Full NFL career to coach Blue Mountain State Goats.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I don't know. Who would Thad be? I don't even know. I can't even think of a guy that crazy in this generation anyway.
But have to go back and rewatch Blue Mountain State.
Oh, I'm going to now.
Just a terrible show, but so good.
So funny.
I have to start watching. I've never seen it.
You've never seen this?
What?
Oh my God, Steve.
Remember, it's I've so also good. Never seen The Breakfast Club, and I've been crapped on for that, too.
So. You're not missing anything.
You're not missing much. I don't think I've ever actually seen all of The Breakfast Club.
Well, Blue Mountain State's been on my list of shows to watch, so now that I we've got some Ryder references, I'll have to check it out.
So good.
Trying to think of a good Breakfast Club quote, and I can't think of one. What, you mess with the bull, you'd get hit by the horns or something like that. Isn't that one of the Breakfast Clubs?
Sign the Breakfast Club. That's the only one I got.
Yeah.
Don't you
forget exactly.
We've reached the Greg is singing stage of the show.
Yeah, we've hit this part. We need to move on.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I want to bring up something Riders here. And I've been thinking about this, and I'm going to put out an article in the next day or two that I've had written for probably about 4 months. But it sounds like the CFL is going to get new jerseys. Teams are getting new jerseys this year, potentially new designs. I don't know. Do the Riders / CFL need a rebrand? The Riders have had their current logo, the regular, this S that's on my Zubaz hat, since 1980-something?
There's been tweaks.
Yeah, there's been tweaks. 1985, they've had this current branding, but they dropped the gray in the logo in 2016.
And they fixed the S.
Yeah, but the other previous or primary logos that they've had, they've used for less than 20 years each. This one's going on 40. Is it time for a refresh? Kind of the way that the CFL went from their logo to Jeffrey Orange's one thing that he did for the league, sustained thing for the league by changing the logo. Do you guys? Because I think it's past time. I think it's past time. We need something fresh, just in terms of not necessarily to be the primary logo, because I think that should always be the retro logo. But at least for marketing and for branding and for merchandise sales, if you have a good enough logo that, you know, is fresh, it looks clean, it's crisp, you throw that on a hat, on a shirt, on a hoodie, if it looks that nice, I will buy it. I'll pay the, you know, 20% rider tax, whatever it is, at the rider store. But if it's a good enough logo, I will buy it. And I just think there's so much potential with a rebrand.
As the resident logo snob, I am going to go yes, but no. The Riders could use a refresh. I don't think they are going to ever change that logo, considering it is worldwide recognized. One thing Jim Hopson definitely, when he came in, he made that logo synonymous with this team anywhere you go. You go to Vegas, you see it. Like, you'll see those guys selling all those tchotchkes with, like, poker chips with, like, you'll have Alabama chips, you'll have, like, Yankee chips, Saskatchewan Rough Rider chips. Rider ones, you go to Mexico, there's Rough Rider ponchos beside Patriots ponchos. Like, that logo is, it is so well known. When they, last year, when they were doing those, the team schedule announcements, and they're showing logos to people that don't know anything about sports, the Riders was the logo they were recognizing. Like, while yes, they could use Refresh for us fans so they can get more money out of us because we're suckers, it'd be ridiculous for them to change it. Could they add to the brand? Yes, of course they could. They trademarked the logo, what, 2-3 years ago now? That has been sitting on mothballs. I could see that in some kind of alternate aspect. But them changing the primary mark, like I said on Rider Fans, what was it, last week? They stitched that into a field for the reason. It's not going anywhere.
Here's my thought on it. You want to change the alternate logo? Absolutely. But if you're talking about changing the primary logo, do the Montreal Canadiens change their logo? Do the New York Yankees change their logo? Do the Green Bay Packers change their logo?
They should.
Those have all been the same for 60 years or more. And there's a reason for that. They are the headliners of their league. They are that image that is recognized
everywhere.
Green
Bay?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Green Bay is right there. Wow.
I've seen some I've heard some Homer takes on this show.
Yeah, that blows my mind.
I'm talking specifically from a logo perspective. I'm not talking team wise. I'm talking
Dallas
logo.
Is star, and I hate the
Dallas would
Cowboys.
Be Dallas would be the other one, absolutely. And I was trying other to think one. Of the one for the NFL. They would probably be up there at the top. But we're talking about from a known logo perspective. These are teams that don't touch their logo for a reason. And the Riders belong in that list. They are that team for the CFL. To me, changing the main logo would be a mistake. The only change I would accept, and Alex, you touched on it, would be if they went back to the retro logo, because that thing is beautiful and it needs to be seen more often.
Okay, hot take, that thing's garbage.
You're garbage.
I understand the emotion behind it, but from a design aspect, it is hot garbage. It is off balance and poorly done.
Kind of like 113 years of Rider history.
Yeah.
Yes.
It kind of fits, actually.
I was going to say, I've never seen a logo fit.
No, I love the uniforms. I love the way they come out in Labor Day. That's a terrible logo and should be used only in that situation.
Now, in terms of jerseys, I think they should just go back to the retro style permanently. Especially the white jerseys. With the green pants, what they wore in the 2010 West Final in Calgary, perfection. I would love to see that more.
AJ Ouellette would love that because that's exactly what the Ohio State Bobcats were.
I will counter that with they need to go back to the 1989 style wraparound helmets. Those things were beautiful. They need those. If they're going to stick with the current logo.
I'm going to defend Gordy Gilroy on this one. He would hate it because he has to line up those decals on every helmet.
That
if you're a little off center putting on the one just on the side, no one's going to notice.
That doesn't sound like a me problem. That sounds like a him problem.
I know.
He gets paid good money to do it. Or he gets paid money. I don't know if it's good money, but he gets paid money to do it.
But we've talked a lot about marketing on this show. I think this is one of those things that could be done to help the marketing. And just something that catches people's eye.
I think a new alternate would be nice, like a new modern look using, even if they use that logo that they trademarked or they don't, I don't care. But I think they need to go with something a little more modern because, yes, the retros are beautiful and yes, the current look is okay. But you're only going to get those younger, you can't throw back to the 1960s and expect the younger fan to be excited by it. Like that's going to work well for your base. Like the base loves anything Ronnie and George. But you need something modern, something more NCAA collegiate to bring in that younger fan.
As long as they don't go back to the watermelon. That's their attempt at modern. Please don't ever do that again. And yes,
the jerseys were fine. The helmets were terrible.
They were all terrible.
All of it sucked. I'm with Steve. That was brutal.
I didn't mind the jerseys. I didn't mind the double.
I love wearing. I have more Rider jerseys than I will admit, because I'm one of those that is a sucker for, you know, spending money, and I will never wear that jersey publicly again. It is horrible. It doesn't help that Ryan Smith is on that jersey, and because he went to the Bombers, screw him. Weston Dressler doesn't get that treatment because I love that guy. But Ryan Smith can bite me.
The biggest faux pas in that jersey is they use the Stampeders number font. I was like, why would you do that? Like, that was when the Stamps and the Riders were like punching each other in the face constantly, and they roll out wearing the Stamps classic number font. I'm like, why?
No, the biggest faux pas in that jersey is that entire jersey.
Nah, the jersey's head fine. The helmet sucked.
No, it's not. Sucked. It's horrible. Sucked.
Oh, there is.
There is nothing redeeming about that toilet paper attempt at a jersey.
Horrible. It was better than Bomber. It was better than Bomber's digital camo.
The pigeon crap.
Yeah.
Or the one that they just had, the blue with the big W on it.
They love Winnipeg. Well, okay, to surprise no one, the terrible taste of the Winnipeg fans, they love those things.
But the big logo, like the big.
Yeah, they love those ones.
Just
yeah.
Terrible. It looks awful.
Yes, I understand that. But for some reason, Bomber fans love it.
Well, simple things for simple minds, I guess.
They can bite me too.
I don't know how to get out of there.
Speaking of people that can bite Steve.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think something could be done. Anyway, let us know what you think. Listening and watching. Do you think the Riders could use a refresh? Maybe not a rebrand. Maybe that's the wrong word, but a refresh in the branding. Maybe we'll go that route.
I think they could use something to add to it. A new alternate, a new side logo, a new secondary, something out there. Keep the retro stuff, keep that separate, but yeah, have it something else.
And team up with like 22 Fresh or something, because kids still love 22 Fresh. So get kids involved somehow. You have to get them to like the logo, like the brand. And they'll buy tickets when, you know, they can make their own money, all that kind of stuff. Like that's what they have to do. They have to get younger in the fan base. And I mean, that's the whole purpose. Like, you look at what the Saskatoon Berries are doing. It's brilliant. And I just think that there's some really good people, especially in Saskatoon, with the Berries and the Saskatoon Blades, with the whole bananas and everything else they've done has been just excellent.
You can tell the Blades, the Rush, and the Berries have the same marketing team because they are putting in the work right now. They are doing so good.
Go up to Saskatoon and have a meeting with them and just get a creative thought process going and spitball some ideas and see what you can come up with. Again, it'll be just like any other ad. It's not going to, all of them aren't going to, you know, hit home runs. You're going to strike out on some, but give it a try. Sell some merch off that, make some money.
And if it fails really bad, you'll sell merch that way because people will want to collect it anyway.
Exactly. So anyway, let us know what you think. Do you think there should be some sort of refresh in the branding? And one other thing, we briefly touched on this last week, and I wanted to bring it up this week. The Edmonton Elks ownership bid presentation is coming from a group of former players that want to buy the Edmonton Elks. This is headed by Garrick Jones, who played for the Elks. I think he played for the Stamps and the Bombers as well. Played for the Houston Texans. He's actually done really well for himself post-football in marketing, everything else he's doing. So he's kind of leading this. But in his group of former players that want to put this presentation together to potentially buy the Elks, Damon Allen, Tad Cornegay, Calvin McCarty, Adam Rita, Nick Lewis, Fred Stamps, Dan Comiskey. Like, these are some big time names here. A lot of guys that have the Edmonton, you know, connection, right? That played for the team, that are from there. I like the idea of former players wanting to own a team, because and the plan was to try and bridge the gap between owner and player, to make things better for players, to make things more accessible and whatnot. I like the idea. They've been talking to the consultant group that the Elks have hired, to, you know, look at, should they go to privately owned instead of publicly owned? But I have more questions about this than I do anything else, because what if things don't go well? Let's say they buy the Edmonton Elks. The record on the field doesn't change. They're still a poor team off or on the field. They need to get fans back. And if you're not winning, doesn't matter who your owner is, people aren't going to come back. And if you're not making money, how long is an owner going to stick around for? Not everybody is a Bob Young, David Ackles, who will just keep throwing money around just to keep a team afloat. So, like, is it sustainable? I don't know if it is.
You would have to think if they're legitimately going to take a run at this, they have to have a solid investment plan behind them or a big money investor, because yeah, Garrick Jones has done well. Damon Allen is doing okay outside of football, but I don't know how much money all the rest of these guys actually have. They had very successful careers, and yeah, they probably are well off, but are they team ownership well off? I don't know. So how much money can you put in to a franchise that apparently is one of the most successful franchises in CFL history, that's just hemorrhaging money in one of the top markets in this league? I don't know what the answer is. Frankly, if the Elks were not publicly owned, they could have been folded last year.
Yeah.
So, and yes, I understand you want to bridge the gap between owner and player. However, when your owner, like look at Randy Ambrosi as commissioner, he was a player, but when it came to the CFLPA negotiations, that goes out the window.
Yeah,
because at that point, it's a business and you're a businessman. So, yeah, while it's cool going, well, players for players, yeah, all of a sudden, when the players want more money from the owner that used to be a player, that's going to go out the window too.
You see it all the time in major league sports. Players want to get into the team ownership business. But this is the CFL. These are not guys that made millions of dollars throughout their career. But let's take the money aside from it. Let's assume they are all lottery winners post-career and have millions to put up. Let's just live in that fantasy for a second.
They won the Powerball. Okay.
Sure. They've got a $500 million to throw around. To me, the biggest issue here outside of the money is that's a big group of people. That to me feels like too many cooks in the kitchen. Who's the leader? Who has the most say? Do they vote on everything? How does this kind of consortium work when you've got 7, 8, 9 guys all relatively well known in the CFL landscape? Who's the face of the organization? You know, we're all Penguins fans. Who's the Mario Lemieux of the group as opposed to the Ron Burkle? Right?
Like, that's the difference though. Mario was always going to be the face. Burkle was always the money.
Right.
In this situation, it's probably going to be whoever has the money is going to be. I would argue, I have a sneaking suspicion, Garrick Jones is going to have more sway than Tad Cornegay.
And if that's the case, if there's one guy that's fronting 90% of the money or 80% of the money, what is he doing with the others? What's the point? To me, it's just bringing in names that's only going to cloud it more than it's going to help. And those are all names that we all love. Like, we're talking some big names in CFL history. Damon Allen. Tad Cornegay is big in Ryderville. We all remember him. Nick Lewis, Fred Stamps. These are all big name guys. But what's the point if they're not bringing financial backing along with them to make it work.
Oh, I'm sure they're bringing I'm sure they're bringing a financial investment behind them. What you're doing is, though, you're lowering the risk of yourself by giving Tad Cornegay 5%. That's 5% you're not going to lose.
Oh, absolutely. And I get why you want to bring in them from a money standpoint. But to me, it just feels like it's setting up for failure when you've got seven or eight big name guys who are all going to want their camera time, who are all going to want their, you know, face of the organization time. I just don't see it playing out as well as I think Elks fans would like to believe. But I might be the eternal pessimist on this one.
And I get your point. Like, yesterday was the 30th anniversary of John Candy's death. So you had a lot of Argos with him and Gretzky and McNall. Three very big personalities. Candy, obviously, McNall more than Gretzky, even though Gretzky is probably more well-known now than those two are. But all three of them were seen a lot. All three of them carried quite a bit of weight in front of the camera. You're right. Seven is too many. Like, Dan Kaminsky is not going to get the play that Damon Allen does.
Yeah, take the three big names in there, combine them with the money guy, and I think you've got something to work with. But I guess we'll see.
Now, I watched it was about an 8-minute interview that Garrick Jones did. And I know when you're getting a presentation together and finalizing all that, which is what he's doing right now with everybody else for this bid, you can't really get into great detail on what you're presenting in public before you present it to, you know, the Elks and the consulting group and whatnot. But it just seemed like there was no plan whatsoever. And I just don't know if this can work. I don't know. I still have more questions than I have answers. And obviously, we'll wait until the bid process happens, if it does get to that point, and what their presentation actually is. Because it's intriguing to me. I really think it could be. It has the potential to be something very, very good for Edmonton specifically, but for the league in general. I just don't know if this is something that can actually last.
My concern with this situation is this is not the first time Garrick Jones has tried to buy a team. In any league, he tried selling NFTs to buy an NFL team. I don't know him as a businessman. I don't know him. It just seems very, to use a wrestling term, carny, almost. And I would love to see him put his money where his mouth is, but this seems like he's trying to draw money in. I don't know. I would love that story of a CFL player, was a great player, owns a team, good for the league. I live and die this league. This league is going to be part of my DNA, and I'm going to put my stamp on it. This seems very showmanship and trying to raise a brand and more than save a franchise, unfortunately.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens when if this gets off the ground, where it goes from there. Because I like the idea, but again, I just don't know. Again, I have more questions.
Want to make a bet?
No.
I got an idea.
Okay, what's your terms?
No, I just want to make a bet. I bet that part of their presentation to bring fans back is to name the team back.
He did reference them as the old team name instead of Elks.
Yep.
In that interview. So maybe.
I bet you we are going to be litigating the name again.
I don't know. Oh, we'll see where it goes. Like I said, I'm intrigued, but more questions than answers. And I feel that's just all we're ever going to have from this is more questions than answers. But something needs to get done in Edmonton. I don't know what the answer is, whether it's new private ownership, whether it's, you know, new people in charge. I don't know, but something needs to happen there.
Win football games is probably their biggest problem right now.
Probably. Winning cures all. We've seen that. We know how that is here in Saskatchewan. Winning got us a brand new stadium. So, but if you're not feeling it, who knows?
We'll find out this year.
Yeah, that's right. But I think we'll leave it there this week here on the Piffles podcast. Again, Piffles podcast brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Special thanks, of course, go out to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty and Churchill Brewing Company for their support making the show possible. Thanks for watching on YouTube, on Sasstel Max TV on demand, listening on your favorite podcast platform. We thank you for that. As always, this is Tyler Gilbert, not Greg singing. He did that earlier.
Yeah, we don't need that again.
No, that's a one time a show thing. This is Tyler Gilbert with Ghost Behind Your Mind. The Ghost.